Postcards from Beyond, written and narrated by Paul Harris. Sorrow is a guru. All life is non-dual. In reality, there are no separate things that exist distinct and independently from one another. Life comes all of a piece. Given that there are no things, this means that there is nothing that is born, and nothing that is subject to change, decay, and death. Hence there is no suffering. Just this is perfection. This is peace. The comprehensive realization of non-duality is nibbana. It is the permanent freedom and happiness that lies beyond the endless tumult of dualistic existence. To the enlightened mind, the conventional reality that most people take for granted as being absolutely real is understood to be illusory. The beings, objects, locations and events that appear to exist in a solid and reliable state do so only because of a deep existential ignorance or blindness. Even time, space, matter and consciousness share this same hallucinatory quality. The apparent existence of any one thing depends upon an infinite number of other conditions being present. Remove or change just one of these, and in that instant, that thing ceases to be. You cannot have an object separate from the conditions that go to make it up. Delimit reality into separate entities, and in that moment, the truth of non-duality is obscured. The objects thus created are deeply unsatisfactory, subject as they are to change, decay, and death. In Buddhism, dualistic existence is called samsara. In contradistinction to nibbana, it is not happy, peaceful, or free. This is because conditions are always changing, which makes life fundamentally unstable and unreliable. To identify with and rely on anything within dualistic existence for one's happiness, therefore guarantees suffering. The enlightened mind sees and understands both nibbana and samsara. The enlightened mind, therefore, does not make the mistake of identifying with and developing attachments towards anything in the dualistic world. Its appearance is clearly comprehended as being deceptive and empty of any intrinsic reality. The enlightened mind does not hanker and crave for life to be different, and is therefore tranquil. The unenlightened mind, on the other hand, neither sees nor understands nibbana or samsara. Blinded by ignorance, the unenlightened mind fundamentally misperceives dualistic existence. It is seen and believed to be intrinsically real, ongoing, stable, and reliable. This hallucination is clung to, regardless of the fact that the things of the world always let us down. Whenever the unenlightened mind is confronted by the real facts of life, such as loss or change, it suffers. Ignoring these self-evident facts, it instead responds with a passionate desire for life to be different. Believing that life should be different, it clings to that notion and attempts to make it so. This generates endless suffering, because whatever new pattern is created, it will still have the same inherent nature to change, decay, and die. As a friend of mine once quipped, if life was a stick of rock, suffering would be the word running through it. Rarely does the unenlightened mind question the validity of these first assumptions and consequent misperceptions. Rarely does the unenlightened mind look up from its endless preoccupations and self-absorption to look at samsara directly and see it for what it is. A rare occurrence it may be, but this is not to suggest that it never happens. The Tibetans have a saying that sorrow is a guru, because it teaches us the need to live a spiritual life. It is the direct personal experience of the repeating patterns of craving and suffering that eventually causes us to reflect wisely and begin asking fundamental questions about the nature of life. This was certainly the case with Gotama. He renounced his cosseted life of royal privilege and undertook the spiritual search as a penniless wanderer, only after having been confronted with the realities of disease, old age, and death. The question that inevitably arises is how? How do you face up to reality? Where do you look? And what is it exactly that you are looking for? Finding Nibbana is not at all easy. It's not located anywhere. It cannot be described, thought about, or perceived by the senses. It lies altogether beyond time, space, matter, and consciousness. In addition, it is so subtle and intimate that the very act of looking for it obscures it. Yet, for all of that, people do find it. Moreover, they maintain that when you do finally realize what it is then as obvious as a gooseberry sitting in the palm of your hand. This is an important point to bear in mind. Although when we try to describe enlightenment, it may appear to be a rather complex and baffling conundrum, the true comprehension of it, however, is utterly simple and self-explanatory. Gotama undertook the search for Nibbana out of compassion for all beings. When he did realize the truth, it was entirely through his own efforts and without the help from anyone else. That he actually found the needle in the haystack without any guidance is awesome enough, but he was able to accomplish even more. Despite the fact that enlightenment is a non-conceptual understanding, he was nonetheless able to fashion and communicate a complete and effective teaching. Through this, anyone can, with the requisite endeavor, come to realize exactly what he had realized. We call what he taught Buddha Dhamma, and the precision, economy, logic, and above all, effectiveness of his exposition make for a teaching of flawless beauty. It is truly a masterpiece. The Buddha's great contribution to humanity was to provide us with the how. The Buddha encapsulated his realization very precisely in what he called the Four Noble Truths. The first is that life, as seen from the dualistic standpoint, really is suffering. The second is that craving born of ignorance is the cause of suffering. The third truth is that Nibbana is real, and it is entirely possible for anyone to realize the complete cessation of suffering. Finally, the fourth truth confirms that there is a way to achieve this. The Noble Eightfold Path. This consists of right view, right thought, right action, right speech, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. From the very outset, it's critically important to understand that the Buddha's teaching is not designed to produce a future result. Although paradoxically, we must also appreciate that realizing enlightenment will take time. To explain, non-duality is real now, even as you listen to these words. It is not something that needs to be created. You cannot make nibbana happen any more than you can make the sunshine, because it always is. When the sun is obscured by cloud, we say that the sun has not come out today, but actually we know that it's always there shining. In the same way, nibbana is always right here now, but hidden behind a thick fog of ignorance, wrong views, misperceptions, and the myriad activities born of craving and clinging attachment. The student of Buddha Dhamma is not trying to produce enlightenment. Rather, the task is to extinguish the fires of craving and eliminate the smoke of ignorance, for these are the things that obscure the radiant eternal truth. To do this, however, we need to develop our mental faculties, and it is this process which takes the time. How does the path work? The fulcrum upon which the whole training turns is mindfulness, along with clear comprehension. Mindfulness is the choiceless awareness of whatever is present in our experience right now. Clear comprehension is the understanding of what we are experiencing in the context of our aspiration to realize nibbana. Mindfulness, the Buddha said, was the one way to overcome suffering. Paying detailed and systematic attention to conscious experience as it unfolds allows us to learn directly about how life really works. In the process, we undo all the wrong views and misperceptions that create and perpetuate attachment to the illusion of duality and all the suffering that then ensues. In Buddhism, we call this seeing into and comprehending reality insight wisdom. It is wisdom that dissipates the fog of ignorance. Mindfulness is the opposite of ignorance and can arise only in the absence of craving. This means that sustained effort must also be made in learning how consciously to restrain acts of craving in body, speech, and mind. Otherwise, the mind is forever caught up in its neurotic preoccupations and displacement activities, and continues to ignore reality. Living an ethical life and training the mind to be quiet help to create a spacious and calm mind, which is a vital prerequisite for developing insight. For ease of exposition, we can condense the factors of the Noble Eightfold Path into three trainings: those of sila, or ethical conduct, samadhi, or mental control, and panya, wisdom. These three trainings are undertaken together. They are like the legs of a tripod, in that each one simultaneously depends upon and helps to support the other two. Take up and develop one aspect of the training, and in doing so, you begin to develop it all. To sum up, we suffer whenever we crave for life to be different than it is. The roots of all craving lie in a fundamental and profound misapprehension of life. To release ourselves from suffering, we must cease to ignore the way life really is, and instead pay exquisite, mindful attention to reality as it unfolds moment by moment. In this way, we produce the insight wisdom that eventually destroys this ongoing fundamental delusion. The Buddha's teaching compassionately guides us in how to do this. For some people, the idea of non-duality might appear a bit far-fetched. After all, it's obvious that there are things, isn't it? Or perhaps the descriptions that are offered appear too philosophical too heady, or seem to be a little too divorced from the realities of everyday life. Fortunately, with the Buddha's teaching, you are not being asked to blindly believe anything that you do not wish to believe. The real driving force behind true engagement with Buddha Dhamma is the realization of the all-encompassing nature of suffering. The motivation to follow this way comes when you finally wisely reflect upon the fact that no matter how hard you try, no matter how many different options you employ or directions in life you take, the genuine, lasting peace to which you aspire never actually materializes. You finally notice the recurring pattern that, notwithstanding your very real achievements in life, you are still haunted by a basic state of discontentedness. You reflect that you have tried as many worldly ways as you can think of to assuage that sense of dissatisfaction, and that none of them have ultimately worked. Despite that constant endeavour, you are still subject to the same old fear, anxiety, pain, and distress. You are still liable to disease, old age, and death. You still lose the things you love, are united with the things you do not love, and cannot get the things you want. You find that you are still left with the same fundamental questions that have secretly always been troubling you. Why am I suffering? When will I be truly happy? What is life for? It's a very humbling moment to realize that you do not know. Yet, to know that you do not know, that is where the true path to understanding begins.